Well, I'll answer questions that are written down, and more can be passed up, and then people who don't have pen and paper can ask them out loud.
Neighbors for Peace, we can't even get our act together here.
Use the back blank side of the piece of paper to write a question on, please, and pass it up. And if that doesn't work out, you're certainly welcome to ask it out loud. And in the meantime, I'll try to answer some of these so that we can move along. Who do we contact to get Bybee and you disbarred and get prosecution of Cheney, Bush, Rice, Rumsfeld, etc.? How do we restore our Constitution? Well, you know, the easiest thing for the 60% of us who are online is to give you websites. And if you go to prosecutebushcheney.org, you'll find everything. If you go to impeachbybee.org, you'll find impeachment of Bybee information. If you go to disbartorturelawyers.org, you'll find information on getting the lawyers disbarred. Getting prosecution, you know, a number of these people are facing indictments in Spain, which is up against intense resistance from the White House. There is the possibility of prosecution in foreign countries and potentially internationally for some of these crimes. And the crimes where there are dead bodies, there's no statute of limitations. So this continues forever, as it did with people like Pinochet. And most of these crimes are illegal under state of Illinois law and local law. It is undoubtedly illegal to spy without a warrant under Illinois state law. And you all have been spied on without a warrant in the state of Illinois. If you can find jurisdiction for a crime, you can prosecute it anywhere. How many of you have read Vince Bugliosi's book on prosecuting Bush? A few. Vince Bugliosi, who prosecuted Charles Manson and, you know, is the all-star top record for successful prosecutions in the country. Vince wrote a book laying out the case for prosecuting Bush for the murder of U.S. soldiers by sending them to Iraq, where he knew some of them would die in an unjustified illegal war. And that can be prosecuted anywhere where someone has been sent over to Iraq and died from that jurisdiction. And so, you know, one thing we could use would be some persuaded and converted or elected prosecutors with decency and ambition at the local or state levels. But, you know, ultimately we can't just go lobby the Justice Department. Unless we can really shut it down, and we'll try in March, and you should join us, we're going to be a lot better off going through Congress and forcing Congress to force the Justice Department to enforce some laws. I'm doing the ones with big handwriting first. Is the U.S. Constitution as it is too loose? Or is the problem that we are ignoring the intent of the Constitution? Both. There are many wonderful things in the Constitution that we are throwing in the trash. And there are many ways in which the Constitution needs to be improved. And there are some ways in which it has been, thankfully, improved already, but very few. The only right we're given in the Constitution is habeas corpus. And we saw President Obama throw that out standing in front of the Constitution in the National Archives, say we're going to just lock people up without any sort of process forever and ever. And the other rights we have are all sort of negative rights. You know, the government can't do this, the government can't do that. We don't have the right to vote. We don't have the right to health care. We don't have the right to housing. We don't have the right to a living wage. We don't have the right to a decent environment. You know, there are other countries' constitutions so many miles ahead of us that they're giving rights to the environment you know, not to people to have an environment, but to the environment itself to have rights, which is not, I think, any crazier than giving rights to corporations, which we do. I think, you know, when the Constitution has been misread in crazy ways so that it now gives constitutions all the rights it gives human beings, it has to be fixed and explicitly bar that lunacy. But in other ways, it just has to be updated because it's way out of date. Could you address our longest-running, endless, unwinnable war, the war on drugs, which has resulted in the prison industrial complex and the U.S. having the largest prison population on Earth, 2.3 million and growing, that has bankrupted all the states? Well, I can't.
Another war. This war has gone on since 1914, almost 100 years. It's unwinnable and it's endless.
I certainly agree with everything you just said and said here.
And what do you do about it, is what I guess I'm asking you.
Well, I'm honestly going to try and answer you if you'll let me, but but I can't answer you with tremendous expertise. I have not studied our prison industry or our war on drugs.
Everybody does not recognize this.
I couldn't agree more, but it's going to be hard to answer you. All I can say is that you're absolutely right. I doubt anyone in this room disagrees with you in the slightest. It's a major, major problem that's never in the corporate news, so it's not in the top of our minds. We don't think about it. We have statistics like unemployment, and we're shocked that it's 10%, when of course that's leaving out millions and millions of people, but it would be 11% if you just put in the people who are behind bars, who in other countries wouldn't be. You know, we have a huge population, and many of them we're now putting to work for 25 cents an hour or nothing, which is an incredibly dangerous system to be establishing. And, you know, it's lunacy in terms of drugs, but that's being corrected through state legislatures, where it will be first corrected. And when the states get sane drug policies, eventually the nation will. It's a crazy policy in terms of race. It's a racist system. It's crazy financially. It costs us so much. You know, we'll have to spend more once we finally lock John Yoo up than what Berkeley pays him, you know, but it's certainly by no means the only thing or the largest thing that has bankrupted all the states, but it is one thing that is part of the picture, and we have to deal with all of these things together, with the need for green jobs, a decent economy, a decent environment, a humane system of government at home instead of all the wars and all the military where all the money goes. And, you know, more of the money goes to the wars and the military, and now at the moment to Wall Street, than anywhere else. But the prison industry is the breeding ground for what the torture lawyers put in place in foreign prisons. It's largely outside the rule of law, and it's been privatized to enormous extent. And you have financial interests, and you have community public interests as an economic tool in expanding and maintaining prison populations, and you have prison unions supporting it. And it's a very, very dangerous and insidious thing that we have to address. And I would support. The only thing I would ever say I support that my senator from Virginia, Jim Webb, has done is support his proposal to have a commission to look at completely reworking our criminal justice system. And, you know, that needs to be put in the House. Jan Schakowsky should do it. I don't think it has been. And it needs to be advanced with every senator. What purpose is the House of Lords in British Parliament? Does it have any more or less power than the House of Lords?
Public comment.
House of Commons. Well, as with most countries around the world, the House of Lords has significantly less power, negligible power, in comparison to the Commons. Whereas in this country, our House of Lords has more power than our House of Commons. Our Senate has more power than the House. And this was intentional. It was designed to be an anti-democratic institution. Jefferson was quite upset when he got back from France and found out about the Senate. They hadn't planned on having that. And the powers it has should be put in the House if the Senate has to continue to exist. The powers on confirming appointees and treaties and everything that the Senate does should be put in the House, but ultimately the Senate should be eliminated. And those nice big buildings should be used to expand the House. You know, we also, unlike almost if not any other country around the world, the people in the House of Representatives are expected to represent far more people than anybody could possibly represent, even if they were trying. And the House hasn't been enlarged in many, many years and needs to be. So enlarge it into the Senate offices and get rid of the Senate. What will it take to get the Democratic politicians to uphold the causes we've voted them in to do? It feels like most of them are on the Republican payroll. Where are the real progressives? Well, some of them are blackmailed by Republicans. Jane Harman, we know, is blackmailed by Bush and goes along with it and so forth, and who knows how many other cases. But for the most part, you don't need that explanation. They're bankrolled by the same types of wealthy interests that the Republicans are. And, you know, at this point, it will take intense pressure. It will take, and it works sometimes. But it will take making it harder for them to ignore you than to ignore the donors and the media and the president. But, you know, it doesn't occur to some people, but when you talk to them, when you talk to the so-called progressive Congress members and their staffers, but why won't you do this that everybody thought they elected you to do? Why won't you do it? The number one excuse you get is that Fox News wouldn't like it. The corporate media would attack me, right? I mean, in 2005, we were working with John Conyers pushing towards the impeachment of Bush and Cheney while the Democrats were in the minority and couldn't actually do it. And then the minute that they got the majority and Pelosi told him, no, you can't do that, then Conyers, you know, gave us a lot of different excuses and they weren't consistent and so forth, but the one that came up recurringly the most and the one that you hear now for why you can't impeach Jay Bibee is Fox News wouldn't like it, right? They're terrified of the corporate media. And, you know, we could enact serious media reforms, and we are going to have to. And we're going to have publicly funded media. Privately funded investigative reporting is dying. But we have the money to create serious media outlets now if we wanted to. We just, you know, the North American liberal is like the one species that doesn't get it and won't do it. And every election cycle, we put enough money just from labor unions or just from progressive groups, put enough money into election campaigns, most of which goes into the corporate media outlets for ads, that we could have created a new television network that actually reports the news every day of every year through every future election. And, you know, we don't do it. I think that's, you know, that's the weakest link and maybe the best place to attack. Well, you know, when a right-wing media outlet doesn't make any money, or when a guy like Glenn Beck has all his sponsors pull out, they just stay on the air losing money, because the point isn't to make money. It's to fund their propaganda. When Air America, now you can critique the way they did business and whether they had a clue how to do business and so forth, but when they weren't making money, they quit. And You know, we need them back. But they were never as good as Pacifica. The ideal is the community radio station, and they can be built up from something very small to something very, very big by building them up gradually. And I know at least there used to be some good ones here in Chicago that I assume are still around and should be built up and promoted. What is the strategic benefit of protecting Cheney and you and such like folks? Are they worried about Fox News backlash and Republican, I guess I answered this, and Republican craziness, or what is it really? Do you think Obama is staying true to who he actually is or was, or has he been altered? Sounds like an operation at the vet. Has he been altered just by his ascension to the presidency of the White House? I think I'm not even going to mention Reverend Jackson in this answer or what he had to say about President Obama. But I think that, yeah, I mean, nobody cares about lawnmowers until they own a house, and then suddenly all they care about is, you know, nobody cares about presidential power until they're president. But, you know, he didn't change that dramatically. I mean, he was asked during the Pennsylvania primary, will you prosecute these criminals? And he used that line about we must look forward, not backward. Same thing as after the election, right? I mean, I had a guy in St. Louis last night tell me that what he really liked about Barack Obama was that he had the nerve to vote against the Iraq War. Anybody spot the flaw? Right? Howard Dean had millions of people on that one, too. He voted against the Iraq War. You know, Obama's campaign won the top advertising marketing award for branding his campaign, deservedly so. And, you know, he was in the Senate opposing the war, as they call it, and voting to fund it every time, just like all of them, right? I mean, when John Murtha just died, every headline said, war critic, John Murtha, you know? I mean, food critics do buy a lot of food, and movie critics buy a lot of movie tickets, but this guy funded and made his colleagues fund every war, but was a critic of it, right? And this is our standard of who's good and who's bad in politics, who says better stuff, right? And Obama said better stuff. Right? And, you know, his rally speeches were always better than his specific policies, you know, and even on his specific policies, he's gone back on a lot of promises. But for the most part, he's gone back on promises he never made that we just fantasized about. I think that's the bulk of it. And he knew what presidential power was going to be when he sought it. And he's done everything he could, just as his predecessors did, to preserve and augment the power passed down to him. He's just had dramatically more power than anybody else ever before in the world given to him to start with, right? And he made great eloquent speeches about how unconstitutional to use a signing statement to rewrite a law, and then he did it for 5 months until he figured out something worse to do. And he's done better things than Bush on some issues, and he has a better Labor Department and a better policy on this and that, but on these fundamental issues of what we're going to pass down to future generations and where the power is and who we're going to kill, he's as bad or worse. He's fixing in place these powers in a way that one administration alone couldn't. And people will say, well, yeah, if he went out of line, they'd do what they did to Kennedy. And maybe they would. But he sends tens of thousands of people who are every inch as human as he is to kill and die for no good reason every day in pointless wars and to attack a town as a PR stunt. If you're going to do that and you're not going to risk your own life, what good are you? So I want to take the focus off the president because I want to go after where we might have some leverage. We never imagined we could lobby Bush. We protested against him, but in order to lobby other people who might listen to us, I think that's what we have to do here. But we have to, you know, we have to face up to who Obama is. Get the troops out of both countries and get health for all people. Get rid of big government. Did you just give me some new ones? Because all the old ones are right here. Hold on. These ones, okay. Well, the only thing I would quibble with, of course, is the get rid of big government part. You know, I would get rid of the biggest part of government by getting rid of the biggest part of the military. You know, more than half of your income tax dollar goes to killing, goes to the military and wars and debt for military and wars. And that's lunacy. And we will again this year have the largest military budget in history, on top of which we'll again have these war supplemental bills that we weren't going to have anymore. You know, Jan Schakowsky said she was voting for one in June because the president asked her to. Other Congress members said they were voting for it because it was the last one, right? Like you're killing children. Oh, I'm going to kill one more because it's the last one. What does that mean? You know, but it wasn't, of course, the last one. John Murtha told us the next day that there was going to be another one, and here it is. And if they tell us this is going to be the last one, who's going to believe them? So, you know, I would, if we could get people to understand what the biggest part of the big government is, and then they were still talking about get rid of the big government, then I'd be with you for sure. And I look at a lot of polling and surveys in the book because it's encouraging to do so. Because on all these issues where we think we're some sort of leftist fringe group, we're a large majority of the country, at least in terms of opinion, if not activism. And there was a study done out of the University of Maryland where they showed people the federal budget, where everything goes, every department, every program. What would you move? What would you cut? What would you add? What would you take here? And you had a strong majority of Americans who would cut over 30% of the military budget and put it into useful things, into education, into jobs, into environment. Overwhelmingly, people want a lot more into green environmental things. And, you know, and when Dennis Kucinich used to say, cut 15%, he would be, you know, mocked and scorned as a communist. When you have majority of the public, you know, despite the media's propaganda wanting to cut over 30%, at least when they take half an hour to look at it and think about it, that shows the problem we've got. When Congressman Barney Frank last year had a proposal to cut 25%, and use the research that so many good organizations have always put together year after year for decades and said, here, let's cut 25% of these wasteful weapons programs that never worked or were for World War II or, aren't, you know, the Japanese fleet isn't there anymore. And this is a guy, Barney Frank, who you can't get away from. You know, he coughs. He says one thing about a bank, and he's all over television. And he held a press conference, announced weeks ahead of time with guest speakers and on Capitol Hill, you know, there was no rain that day. Not a single reporter, not a single reporter showed up for him to present his proposal to cut 25% of the biggest part of the big government. That's what we have to change. What methods do we use to motivate our friends and neighbors to take action? There seems to be more and more apathy and indifference. Well, arguments don't usually do it. It's example. You show them something you're working on, especially something you're about to win on, and get them involved and show them how much fun it is. There are always little local, if not state, issues you can be working on and win. And you want to make as many people as part of that win right before it happens as you can, because people are victory dependent. And what motivates people is seeing other people do it, is imitation, right? They have all these I have a little kid, and they have and he doesn't watch television, but they have on television all these kids shows where they teach kids how to be good people, you know. And so they'll for half an hour they'll show these kids or animals or cartoon characters being mean or greedy or rude or whatever, and then at the end they'll learn what they should have done and make up and everything's right and so forth. But kids don't watch the whole program. They watch each little bit separately, and they come away learning all the nasty stuff that everybody did and not connecting that that wasn't what you were supposed to do. And so kids who learn how to behave from television are meaner than the kids who don't. And adults and other primates are the same way. We learn by watching things and imitating them. And when we see people engaged in activism and enjoying it and accomplishing things, then we do it and we don't need any argument. But if we don't see that, then arguments are, you know, are very hard. And, you know, it's crazy that we have this kind of attention span. It's crazy that we need victories. The women who got women the right to vote never saw women have the right to vote. And they were happy to work until they died and let another generation win it. You know, we wouldn't have gotten rid of slavery if people hadn't just happily worked until they died on what they had a moral responsibility to work on. I mean, it shouldn't even be a question. But, you know, you want to motivate people. You show them their self-interest, and you show them examples of doing it. You know, and there would be differences if we had a draft. I don't want one. But we wouldn't have college debt if we didn't have the wars. And you can tell students that. You can tell them that in Europe, you go to college and it doesn't cost money. And it doesn't cost money because their governments don't put all your money into wars. It's the only difference. So you can always show people how it affects them, but they aren't going to get off their butts unless they see you doing it. Do you recommend that we get active in electoral politics or simply stay on the sidelines as gadflies trying to influence our representatives by our comments, letters, and even activism? Well, I would say all of the above, including running for office, but I would make election work 5% of what we do instead of 95% of what we do. And you know, one of the reforms we need is for people to be automatically registered to vote when they turn 18, like they are to kill and die. And then we wouldn't think of this busy work of registering people to vote as activism. And we wouldn't think of activism as happening before elections. We would think of it as happening after elections, in between elections. Another reform we need is to limit election seasons to a few months, so that there's a period of governance in between periods of elections. And you know, so we couldn't survive without elections, but they are minimal, you know, particularly when it's a choice between hideous and moderately less hideous candidate. You know, you're not going to solve what needs to be solved with elections, and you know, we're not going to solve what needs to be solved while anybody in this room is alive. So education has to be part of it. And with education, you always can see the success you're having immediately. So do that too. Do you want to mention the Skype's internet interviews so you can call our reps and get them to participate? Will you do the interviews? Or mention Susan Serpa's visits to our elected reps to what they're telling their constituents where they stand on the war? Well, I have seen some emails from people who are trying to get Congress members to do video interviews with constituents and groups about positions on the war. I don't know if any have done it yet, but whether they do or not, they do public events where you can go and confront them face to face. And you know, I can't tell you how many times I've asked a Congress member, will you sign on to this? Will you make that statement? And they say, oh, sure, just because you ask them face to face. And anybody can get a video camera as good as any in the world for $200. Form an organization of six people, chip in, plan what you're going to do, and go interview these people in person, at their office, at their events, at their homes. You know, politeness is not the highest value while they're murdering human beings. And if you can get them to agree to do an interview from Washington by Skype with you in your house, you know, wonderful. Make a video of it and spread it around. Do our votes count anymore, or are they now manipulated and or stolen? The only general answer is we have no possible way of knowing, and that's unacceptable. We had this election in Massachusetts where we determined that Massachusetts is now a Republican state, and they elected a Republican senator. And this woman set the land speed record for conceding, as a friend of mine, Brad Friedman, wrote. Where the ballots were hand counted in that election, she won, which is, you know, not meaningful or conclusive. I don't know which precincts those were, but nobody can possibly have any idea who won. No recounts had been done, probably haven't been done, and won't be. None of those ballots had touched a human hand. If we want to have elections where we know that the person who got the most votes won, then you have to have pieces of paper that you vote on that are publicly counted in the polling place before all interested witnesses, and those results posted publicly from each polling place, and then totaled regionally and statewide and so forth. Which, you know, there are other reforms that I love and are well-intentioned, like instant runoff voting, that I just have to say, because they won't work with this one, I can't have them, you know, because we have to be able to know that we elected who we elected. And we certainly never elected George W. Bush president. It's sad how often people talk not just about his re-election, but even people who don't think he was elected the first time talk about his election the second time. We have to wise up, because this is a problem that's not going away. This is the last question you will be glad to know. It seems constitutional conventions are the most effective way to create substantive effective change. How do we go about affecting this really in the states, especially a state as corrupt as Illinois, or in the federal government? And second part, is it possible to make public a private corporation? Chomsky has said the government should have bought AIG. On the first point, you know, we've never had a constitutional convention except for the original one, so we can't say from experience. But it was put in Article 5 of our Constitution to allow us to get around Congress. If Congress became unworkable, we could get around it with the states and form a convention to create the higher law of the Constitution, which Congress then has to abide by, and we have to do that. We have to do it. It takes, you know, getting 35 states to apply to Congress for a convention, and then Congress has no choice about it whatsoever, has to say there will be a convention. Now, the convention has to be set up with some reforms in the process, so it's not the Lockheed Martin convention sponsored by AT&T. It has to be our convention. But there is the protection that no matter what the convention does, any amendments that come out of it have to be ratified by 3/4 of the states, right? So everybody, let's not have a convention because they might ban gay marriage, as long as we get 3/4 of, they can't get 3/4 of the states to go along with it, then they can't do it, you know? And if we don't have a country, you know, we're not gonna have marriage of any sort, you know? So, you know, it's not my place, not being gay and being married, to minimize that concern, but we have to be willing to take some risks to open things up with a convention, because it looks like the only chance we have other than completely redoing the government. And how do you clean up Illinois? Well, you know, get public financing as other states are doing. Get all the reforms that I talk about in the book at the state level. There are arguments that we ought to fix this corporate money and election problem with state legislation that makes corporations more clearly creatures of the state and defines them to not have any private rights against the state, much less as human beings. You know, should the government have bought these major corporations? I don't know, but if we were going to shell out, you know, more than enough money to buy them many times over, then yes, we should have bought them and dismantled them and started over. And you know, at the very least, start personally by taking your money out of the mega banks and putting it in a credit union in this neighborhood. And I hope I've answered every question in the state of Illinois. And thanks for your patience. And I'd love to sign books for you and talk informally. Thanks.